I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Maggie. Back in town. Look out, old Maggie is back.
Yeah, is it Monday already?
Yes, it might.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
The Fan.
WFAN.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 102 on The Fan. McMonagle here with you on this now Monday morning. 888-808-1019, that's the number to call. We got you all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Fliegelman on the other side. And we made it! That's right, we made it. Short weekend for me. I was in for Keith Friday. We did a lot on the New York Giants and their quarterback decision to bring in Jameis Winston. We'll get to the baseballs that obviously is here. It's the week. Baseball is back. Cut one more spring training game, and we will see you on Thursday. We got plenty of time for that. But we put a bow on, ultimately, for me, a disappointing St. John season. And I'm not sure there's another way to put it. Oh, but Chris, it came out of nowhere, and it was an unbelievable season, and they were a two seed. This was a team that's been nowhere forever, and we've been celebrating it for so long, and I don't care. I'm sorry. You can't end the way they ended. I talked about this. We talked about whether or not St. John's could do anything in the tournament. Is it a good season? Is it a bad season? Like, here's the thing, and this is why I look at it differently. College basketball as a whole is completely different. Yes, this program has found its footing. I knew that the second they hired Pitino. The second they hired Pitino, I knew that this school was going to turn it around to some level. Maybe not win a national championship. That's not easy to do, as we're finding out. But I knew that they would be there. They have the coach. They have the money. They have the ability to recruit. They can play the portal. We know how good he is at recruiting and playing the portal, and he's running towards it while so many other great coaches in the history of college sports are running away from this new era of college sports. So I knew they would be there, but this isn't like these teams are going to be almost uniquely singular. This is not a group of a bunch of freshmen who are going to get a real great, you know, boost, and this is such a learning experience, and they'll be back next year. And, like, I expect St. John's to be back in next year at some point, but let's be honest. All right, Edgifer, R.J. Lewis, who knows if they'll be back. They're eligible to come back, but maybe they come back. But this isn't the days of old where you would get a young team and you would play them, and then by the time they're seniors, you're ready to win a national championship. Pitino's already talked about not recruiting high school players. They're working the portal. They're changing the whole thing. This is a year-to-year thing. This was a team that was a two-seed. They were one of the hottest teams in all of college basketball. They had the top-ranked defense in all of college basketball. They ran through the Big East like a hot knife through butter. They won the first round by 30 points. They're taking on the 10th-ranked, a 10-seed Arkansas Razorbacks. And now as you've seen the rest of the tournament play out where it's pretty much all chalk, first time since 2017 that an 11 seed is not in the Sweet 16, the Arkansas is the highest seed left in the entire tournament. You could argue St. John's just had on Saturday the worst loss of the tournament. And I know that everything played into it, and please, I don't want to hear about the foul calls. I don't want to hear about the officiating. Was it an issue? Absolutely. Was it poorly officiated this game? Absolutely. On both sides. On both sides. That is not why they lost. And I know we went into this talking about their flaws. And we said it. You get into the tournament and shoot the three, play the D. Got to hit your foul shots to ice the game. Those are all the things we talked about. They were 2 of 22 from 3, 9%. They were 9% from three-point land. They were 20% from the field. And it's not even the three-pointers because we knew they couldn't shoot. And I put out the shooting performance and a bunch of people were tweeting at me. Tell me you didn't watch St. John's without telling me. They haven't been able to shoot all year. Yeah, you get into this tournament, you shoot 9% from 3? You hit 2 out of 22? You're not going to win. Plain and simple. And it wasn't even that. It was at the basket. They were 4 for 16 from layups at one point in this game. They couldn't put anything in. And then we talk about what a great second half team they were. And they were all year long, great second half. The first 12 points that Arkansas scores in the second half are right to the basket, to the paint. Defensively, they weren't nearly as good as they've been. They played their worst game in probably 2 months. And for me, we could talk all we want about where the program is now. And yes, there is no doubt the program is elevated. There is no doubt this school is going to be a team in the tournament year in and year out. As long as Patino's there, it'll be the odd, and I don't know how long that'll be, it's the odd year they won't make it or something. But for the most part, this team's going to be a tournament team with a chance of chasing a national championship. And that's great. And this by no means dampens what this overall program has become, but these aren't building blocks anymore. This isn't a team full of freshmen that are going to really, benefit from the experience they just went through. It's going to be a different team next year. And I know, again, RJ Lewis is going to be there, or is he? Because let's be honest, I know we don't want to kill this coach. And I'll be the first to tell you, he has turned the entire school around. And as long as he's here, the school's going to be in good hands. And I don't know if he was outclassed or outcoached by John Calipari, and obviously that's going to be a discussion. I don't know if he was outclassed. His team shot 2 of 22 from three-point land. Couldn't hit a layup. I'm not sure what he could have done, but I know he could have left in the Big East Player of the Year. And it's like, oh, I know everyone's killing him. I've seen a couple different places. Oh, I don't know if you can kill him for this. He was ice cold. There was nowhere else to go. And then I thought, not only did Patino have a bad game, right? The different things we talk about. He takes out RJ Lewis, which makes absolutely no sense. It's not like anybody else is having a good game. This is the Big East Player of the Year. This is your guy. Your best player fouled out. I mean, you already lost Richmond. So, yes, I think it was a terrible mistake to have RJ Lewis on the bench. And then, obviously, not feeding Zubi Ejiofor in the second half after scoring, what was it, 14 or 16 points in the first half. They're not giving him the ball nearly enough down the stretch of this game. Not nearly enough. And then they're shooting up threes with, a minute and a half left, down 4 points, just chucking up threes when they're shooting it at a 9% clip. And then in the post game, I thought Patino sounded ridiculous in the post game. That, oh, we know, we're not going to tell you. You know why I took him out. You know why? No, we don't know, Rick. We're all puzzled. The broadcast is puzzled. Everyone watching it is puzzled. No, they're speculating he did something wrong, like defensively or something, to put him in the doghouse. Nobody knows why you benched him, Rick. We all know what his numbers were. We all know what his shooting percentage was. We all know the kind of bad game he was having. But I'm sorry. Who exactly was coming off the bench to give him a better chance? Guys who haven't hardly played all year? Guys who average 2 points a game? Guys who are 1 of 8 from the floor themselves and 1 of 3 from 6? They didn't have a single player have 2 threes in this game. Who are you going to other than your best player? At least your best player available. And then in the post game, I'm not going to bash a player. Oh, you're not? I'll take you back a year ago when you called your entire team unathletic. You called your entire team unathletic, laterally slow, just not good enough. The worst experience I've had as a coach. Don't tell me you won't kill your players. You kill them all the time. We're all pumped up watching your halftime speech that you put out there, killing the team about being mentally soft, asking how they grew up so mentally soft. But you're not going to say, oh, I benched my best player because he was shooting poorly? You know why? Because it's not a good enough answer. And to not get to the Sweet 16 when they're a two seed, the only other two seed not in the Sweet 16, in a tournament that has gone completely chalk, in a tournament that has had very little excitement, in a tournament where, you know, the Maryland game, a couple of upsets, not a lot. You know, UConn played like the heart of a champion while losing to Florida. But, I mean, we are talking about one of the more boring, chalk, straight-up tournaments we have seen in a long time. And this two seed was outplayed, outcoached, outplayed, out-toughed, out-everything. And I'm sorry if I'm not going to sit back just because it's the same thing with the Knicks where we're at right now. I'm not going to sit back and just say, wow, what a great year. St. John's is back. Woo. It was a terrible end of the season. Terrible. They completely choked. It was a terrible game. And again, there is no building process here. They're going to have a new team. They're going to hit the portal. They're not even going to bring in young recruits. They're going to go try and shape the team as best it can and go chase a championship next year. And I think they'll do a hell of a job of it. But these years are so uniquely singular that I don't get, oh, well, this was just step one. There is no building blocks. There's no step one. This was a year where they were good enough to win the whole damn thing. They played well enough all year long to win the whole damn thing. They lost four games all year long. And that game was atrocious. That game was a train wreck. That game was miserable to watch, and the refs had a part of that as well. And there was a bad foul, yes. Richmond, that his fifth foul, he goes straight up in the air. It is a terrible foul call. There's no question about it. It's a terrible foul call. It's not why they lost the game. And I'm tired of bitching and complaining about it when it's clearly not why they lost the game, when they shot 9%. Not 19, not 29, 9%. 2 of 22. Well, of course, that's who they were all year. You're not good enough to win shooting 9% from three. Amazingly enough, Arkansas won shooting 10% from three. At least they were 42% from the field. But my main takeaway is horrible, deflating, ultimately miserable loss that doesn't nullify a great year because it was a fun season and it did capture the city. And it has put St. John's back on the map, and I expect them to stay there. But we talked about this with the Met season. Like, this was a season out of nowhere. It was a great run. They got the two seed. They belonged at the two seed. They earned the two seed. They fought tooth and nail all year long to deserve that two seed. And then they threw it away, and it doesn't stamp the great year. I'm sorry. It doesn't nullify it, but it also doesn't. We won't look back at the 2025 you know, St. John's run as anything other than the first year Pitino had a winner. The first year Pitino had a decent team. The first year they made the tournament, however long, first year they won a tournament game in 20 years. Yeah, okay, all those first. But ultimately, it's a forgettable year. They didn't make it through the weekend. And there are blatant mistakes from this coach. He had a terrible game. He had a terrible post game. Why would you take out R.J. Lewis? Why wouldn't you feed Ejiofor more? And even the strengths of this team, the defensive, they got to the paint at will at the start of the game, at the start of the second half. That's just a fact. And now, I don't know. I mean, it's the building block. Is R.J. Lewis even coming back? He just got embarrassed on a standalone game in the tournament, the whole world watching, wondering why their best player's on the bench. Now, he handled it great after the post game, took responsibility, talked about his bad game, talked about his leadership. Point being, the coach took him and put him on the bench with the whole world watching and the broadcast wondering what the hell is going on. You can't lose that game with Lewis on the bench. Now, I'm not a coach. Patino's a coach. And a great one at that, one of the greatest. And I'm not even sure he got outcoached in this game, other than that mistake and not feeding the ball to Ejiofor enough. I don't know if Calipari did anything groundbreaking to say, oh, he outcoached them. All I know is they were awful at every aspect of the game. And after watching it, I didn't have the feeling of, hey, man, this today's a bummer, but ultimately, wow, what a run. So much fun, so many great wins, Big East regular season, Big East tournament. I mean, that's just it. What a great year. What a great year. That's not how I left it. I left that game sick. I turned it off. I threw the controller into the couch, and I said, man, they did not show up. And it was a terrible game for the coach. It was a terrible game all around. So I'm sorry. I wish I could be the guy who say, hey, what a great job. What a great run. It was a lot of fun. We'll see you next year. It's not even like that. This isn't a young team that's put together a core that's going to be here for the next 4 years. We talk about the Knicks, right? This is just year one, as the owner was telling you on a podcast. Hey, this group's going to be together for the next 3, 4, 5 years. They can have multiple chances to win a championship. Got a young core to build around. Young core. In today's college basketball, there are no young cores. St. John's doesn't have a young core that's back and it's going to learn from this experience. It's going to be a brand new team next year. And I think they'll be a good team, and I think Patino's a great coach, and I think they'll be back in similar situations like this. A 2 seed? I don't know. That's part of it, too. How do we know what's going to happen moving forward? This might be the best chance in the next 3 or 4 years to win a championship. I don't know how long Patino's going to be around. Like, this was it. This was an opportunity. And right now, looking at this field, the Sweet 16, where it's all chalk, they're the one team standing there. They're the one team that got knocked out. They're the one, you know, 2 seed not in this tournament, and it feels like that's the worst loss of the tournament. The 10 seed, that's the highest seed in there. So, disappointing loss. I don't think you can have the worst loss of the tournament and tell me what a great year it was. 888-808-1019. We'll get to Jameis Winston and the Giants. I did a lot of it on Friday as it broke right before I came on. We'll get to, obviously, the baseball starting up this week. A lot of talk about the Met rotation, which I've been talking about for weeks. And I've been saying it for a long time. We call one owner, and I understand the owner's done a great job. He spent a lot of money. He reeled in Juan Soto. If you don't have to take my word for it, there's a 2-part documentary explaining exactly how it happened. But one owner gets called cheap for not making the final move. The other one is lauded. And you look at the rotation and you go, Yankees are an all-in. Is that an all-in rotation? Been saying this for a long time. 888-808-1019. We'll get to that as the season is getting ready to start on Thursday. Now, thanks to St. John's, we'll never know. Me and Fliegelman have been talking about this for weeks. What's the show going to look like on Thursday? Yankees opening day at 3 o'clock. Mets opening day at 4 o'clock. Possibly later in the night, a St. John's Sweet 16. What are we going to talk about when we come on? Now I'll never know the answer to that question because St. John's didn't show up on Saturday. And I'm not happy about it. I'm not going to take this nonsense about what a great year it was. Coach had a terrible day, terrible postgame. His star players played awful. They couldn't make a layup, let alone a three-pointer, which they shot it at a ridiculous clip. And I'm not going to sit back and tell you, oh, well, St. John's is back. Are they? What does next year's team look like? It changes every year. This isn't some building block. This isn't some young core put together that's going to learn from the experience. It's not one of these groups, oh, you got to learn how to, you know, the Pistons needed to lose to the Celtics to learn how to win. The Bulls needed to learn to lose to the Pistons to learn how to win. It's not like that. This was just a miserable game in the biggest spot. They played like crap, and it makes me feel a hell of a lot worse about the season than I did before that game was played.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Well, in the end, it's the Knicks that land Carmelo Anthony from Denver, and Amari Stoudemire happy that he's on hand. Stoudemire, addressing the media today, says the team will be hard to guard now, likes the idea of having that 1-2 punch.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Let's go. Let's get this thing underway. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you until 5 a.m. Taking your calls. We started with St. John's. As we put a bow on that season, now look, I'm not trying to kill the whole season. It was a great season. But it's tough to move on from that game and feel the same way you did before it. I thought the coach had a bad day. He had a bad post game. And ultimately, I don't believe that college basketball, and this isn't to knock St. John's in any way. This is just the state of college basketball. State of college sports. You know, football has so many more players that you're bound to have more guys coming back. You could probably make the argument a little bit. But, you know, the idea of this building process to win, or, oh, it's step a great step one. Step one of what exactly? Like, that's what I just don't understand. This isn't step one of anything. Rick Pitino getting hired and the money behind St. John's guarantees them a level of success. At least that's how I feel. It's how I felt the minute Rick Pitino took the job. This just happens to be the first year, and he did it within 2 years, which is incredible. And that can't be taken away. That's the story of all this. Pitino came here, and within 2 years, boom, St. John's is a team right in the middle of this thing, capable of winning a championship any given year. That's what I think has been established. And if you want to say, well, establishing that automatically makes it a successful season, okay. I felt that was coming once Pitino was hired, whether it was this year, next year. Like, I just felt like it was coming. I think that's he builds these teams. There's money behind St. John's. It was going to happen. But this was a special year where the team took on a different kind of vibe, a defensive vibe, a hustle vibe, you know, went right through the Big East, blowing teams away in the second half of games, and to come up small in the manner they did, and to have the exact reasons that we all worried about this team be the issues, as well as not being as good defensively and allowing Arkansas to get to the basket, especially to start the second half. Because, right, they make the comeback. Arkansas has been up for a little bit. They make the comeback. They tie the game. Arkansas takes a 3-point lead into the half. And then coming out, you figured, listen, this is where St. John lives. They got it to within three. They fought back. All right, so they tied the game. Okay, they're down three at the half. No big deal. They're going to come out and take care of business in the second half. And instead, they continued to struggle with their shots. They continued to miss layups. They continued to, you know, really not get the ball enough into Ejiofor. And they allowed Arkansas to get to the basket at will for the first 7 or 8 minutes of the second half. So to me, it's a disappointing loss. And when you look at the landscape of this tournament, it's all chalk. Where's the two seeds? Every other one of them is in the Sweet 16. When you look at how this tournament has played out, and that Arkansas is the highest seed left, it's a devastating loss because you just don't know what next year brings. There's no building process. There's no guarantee they're going to be this good next year. There's not like this might be the best chance they had in a long time. And that was a disappointing game. And as much as yes, it was the year that we will look back on as where St. John's reestablished themselves as a legitimate team in the Big East and in NCAA basketball, doesn't change the fact that it ended with a miserable loss that's impossible to come away from feeling good about this team. 888-808-1019. Let's get to Brendan in Mineola. What's up, Brendan?
Hey, C-Mac. Love
hey,
you. You always talk the truth, but like, what a passive-aggressive take on St. John's. I'm not no diehard St. John's fan, all right? But you just killed them on one end, and then you come back from the break on the other end, and you're like, oh, they did it. Just listen, that's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Did you watch the entire game yesterday?
Yes.
Okay, did you think Lewis was not a liability on defense and offense? I was screaming to get him out of the game at the 10-minute mark. He had no confidence. Mm-hmm. He was playing confused. He didn't know how to defend. Everyone on the program, oh, he didn't box out. Okay, he didn't box out. That's one thing. Every time he drove to the hoop, he was the slowest guy on the court. He didn't know what to do with the ball. The best thing Pitino did was get him out of the game. The problem was Richmond got in foul trouble, and he never got his shot.
Well, he came out. Well, I believe they took him out of the game. You know, but once Richmond's fouled out, you have no other scorers. You gotta hope your guy gets hot. They don't have anybody else
like
to go
like
to.
Like you said earlier, and everyone else has said, we've all said, why weren't they going to Jiffer earlier?
Yeah,
when there was 9 minutes left and there was foul trouble, that should have been the game. That's where Pitino dropped the ball.
I agree.
Everything you said tonight was right. There was lack of the coaching. Wow, Pitino literally folded his cards to Coach Cal. That was legit. There were so many mistakes. Scott, he showed up, but then Smith, and it's like, what the hell happened to Richmond? He just disappeared. He gets in a foul trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stopped in the ball to Edgifer.
Yep.
When the only defender left, once the tall white kid, I forget his name, I'm sorry, but then what's his name? He's got four fouls. The next guy was going to guard him is Brazil, who showed earlier in the game, he fouled him twice hard. He had no idea how to guard him. And they could have just keep feeding him. And he would have probably got six, eight points. And that would have been that. But no, we had to keep playing outside perimeter with no three-point shooters mm-hmm. and just one-on-one dribble and go. It was a horrible coaching job.
Yeah, Brendan, I just have to disagree with you. I just have to disagree with you. It's not, again, I am not putting the loss on that. I agree with you that there were worse decisions. Like, they should have fed the ball to Edgifer. That was a bigger mistake. And I'm not saying Lewis would have won the game for them. You have to keep him out there. He's the Big East player of the year. You got to hope he finds it. They don't have other options. It's not like they have other legitimate options. They don't. Taking him out of the game didn't help them. Did it help them? Did they look like they played better? Was the defensive better? Was anything better? Like, I'm sorry, I just disagree. Was R.J. Lewis awful? Absolutely. He picked one hell of a game to be the worst version of him we've seen all year, arguably. There's no doubt about that. And that's why they lost more than even taking him out, necessarily. But you have to leave him in. You have to. And that's, I mean, listen, I'm not killing him over it. But it's just a hard thing to disagree. It's a hard thing to not say. Like, nobody understood it. Like, you think it was the best thing. Nobody understood it. The broadcast was all over everything. I thought they did a really good job. They didn't understand why he was out of the game. You got to have your guy in the game. He's your guy. You don't take away your best player if he's having a terrible game in the final minutes of the game. Can you imagine anyone else doing that? Like, I know he's not the same level of talent as college basketball, but, like, you know, just to translate it to the Knicks, if Brunson's having a bad game, I don't care if he's 0 for 35 in the final 4 minutes of the game, you bet your ass Brunson's out there. Like, there is no level of bad play on a team that's shooting 9% from the field. Nobody else is hitting shots. I could understand if one of these guys, if you know, you had someone else shooting well, like, you know, Scott, 1 for 10 from the floor, 1 for 6 from 3. Like, nobody's shooting well. Smith, 0 for 3, 4 of 11 from the floor, 0 for 3 from three-point land. Like, it's not like they had a better option to go to or someone was playing well where it made sense. Tell Lewis to feed the ball into Edgifor. I agree with you, but I'm sorry, you can't say taking him out was the best thing he did. So, and look, I'm not being passive aggressive. What I'm saying is this, I can't take away the fact that it's the first time in 20 plus 30 years that they accomplished a lot of the things they accomplished. This doesn't wipe that away clean. It's not like the season sucks now or that you can't look at this team and say they'd accomplished this, they accomplished that. They still accomplished it. A season for the St. John's Red Storm winning the Big East regular season and winning the Big East tournament, that is a year we haven't seen since the mid-80s. I'm not saying this loss wipes that away. What I'm saying is I can't go to that. It's very much like the Mets season. I really think there's a lot of correlations between them and the Mets. The Mets at least were able to stamp the victory by getting to the NLCS and being one of the two final teams in the National League. But ultimately, everybody wanted to still, you know, we had the seven line wanted to throw a parade for them outside of there, or, you know, at least have a gathering outside the building for when they were cleaning up their stuff to give them a round of applause to let them know how much we love them. Like, a lot of Met fans were immediately able to go, wow, what a year. Where I was like, hey, who knows? You could have a better year next year and not get to the NLCS. St. John's could have a better team next year and not be a two seed and not win the Big East tournament. Like, ultimately, it leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth. It's hard to go straight to acknowledging those accomplishments. That's all I'm saying. It's not like those accomplishments didn't happen, and as next year starts, as you start to get away from it, and you start thinking, wow, I can get pumped up for a St. John's season for the first time in, like, forever. They were literally good last year. They won the Big East tournament. I'm pumped for next year. Patino's going to make sure he does this, and Patino's going to make sure they do that, and I'm fully confident. I'm invested in the idea that next year St. John's is going to be a tournament team with a chance to win a championship, possibly. Like, that's all true, but as of today, the morning after, the Monday after, I can't help but think this is a wasted opportunity. And I don't believe it's step one of any sort of building process, because I think today's college basketball, and certainly the St. John's team, it's step one. Next year will be step one of that team. Step one was the start of the season. Step two was winning the Big East regular season. Step three was the Big East tournament. Step four was the national championship tournament. And that's it. Then you go back to square one next year. There is no building process. They're gonna have mostly a brand new team. I just can't go to it right away. It's gonna take me some time to feel like, oh, this was a good, solid St. John's year. Because right now, it feels like they wasted an opportunity. They should be playing in the Sweet 16. There's no excuse. They played a miserable game. The coach coached a miserable game. And they lost to a team they absolutely should have beaten, because they didn't play all that well either. Mike in New Hyde Park. What's up, Mike?
Hey, C-Mac.
What's up, buddy?
I'm a Georgetown grad. I saw this guy dominate us twice. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, something's rotten in Denmark, as they say. I mean, come on. In my mind, I'm not buying this, you know, Stark's effectiveness argument.
Right.
To me, I think it could be one of a handful of things. First, maybe he was hurt. I saw there was a possession in the first half where he was coming down the court a little bit late. Maybe lollygagging, who knows? The other one, who knows? Maybe he was out partying too late, missed curfew or something like that, skipped the class, something like that.
I don't know. Then you just don't play him to start the game, or you don't play him. You don't play him all game. Allow him to shoot, 3 of 17 and 0 for 3 from 3-point land, and then bench him in the final moments. Like, that's not a disciplinary thing.
He's player of the year. I mean, I
agree. I'm just saying. I agree that it's weird, and that's why I don't understand the coach in the post game acting like he doesn't. You know why? And we don't know why. That's why we're asking. But I don't. I'm just saying. I don't think it's a disciplinary inaction, because that would have been the start. If Patino felt that strongly about him to take him out of the final 5 minutes of the game as punishment, he just would have benched him the entire game. Like, so I'm just saying, I don't buy that excuse. Could he have done things on the floor? Could he have seen lollygagging, as you put it, or defensive breakdowns, or just felt like he wasn't playing hard, or whatever? Like, something might have happened in the game, either injury or lack of effort, that could have led to the benching. I agree with you there. I don't think it was pre-game, though. That's all I'm saying. But yes, I don't know. Something was up, because it doesn't make any sense to me either. I don't know why. And I know a last caller thinks the team was better without him. I can't imagine how you could think that. Like, he's your best player. At that point, you know, Richmond's gone. There's no way the Big East player of the year can't be in the game. I mean, think about that for a second, right? He's the Big East player of the year, and he's not in the final moments. Could you imagine a professional team? Can you imagine the American League MVP, like, getting, you know, pinch hit for in the eighth or ninth inning? Can you imagine the NL Cy Young Award winner, or, you know, the reliever of the year not getting the ninth inning? When he's fully, when, you know, I mean, just because he had a bad game the night before. Like, This is, you don't do that. You don't take the Eastern Conference, you know, player of the year or starting All-Star game. You don't take him out in the final minutes of a game. It's just not what you do. Now it's college. Patino has a better pulse of the team than I do. I'm not very critical of coaches all the time. I try to give coaches the benefit of the doubt. They know their teams better than we do. We can get critical on a certain play call or certain things. Very rare do I say, how do you not put this guy in? Or how do you not? Like, this one's bizarre. No one's shooting the ball well. It's not like they had a guy off the bench having a great night and they're leaving him on the bench. If they put Richmond on the bench with 9 minutes, 10 minutes, 11 minutes left in the second half, right? And he wasn't playing well. He was having the miserable game he had. And then, you know, I don't know, Smith or Prey or someone comes in and is just lighting it up and having a great game, keeping him in the game. He's their best offensive option. He's hitting all the shots. He's shooting it from three. He's playing well. Then, and you leave Richmond on the bench. You leave Lewis on the bench. That makes sense to me. Hey, he was having a miserable game. I benched him for a time. Whoever, you know, the unit I had on the floor was playing better than I was with Lewis. We got back into the game. We were scoring. The offense worked better. It was one bad night. That's it. Lewis is my starter tomorrow. But in that moment, it was working that way. I didn't mess with it. I could understand that argument. Nobody was playing well. Nobody was shooting it well. Nobody was defending well. Like, nobody was playing. Nobody was doing enough to justify the Big East player of the year not playing the game. You could tell me all you want about how bad he was. I don't care. I honestly don't care. He could have missed every single shot. He could have been 0 of 17 instead of 3 for 17. You have to have him in that game. It wasn't like his replacement outplayed him. It wasn't like the unit they had on the floor was scoring points. There was nowhere else to go. It makes no sense to me. It just makes no sense. And you could tell me all you want. He didn't know how to defend. He didn't know what to do with the ball. He didn't know this. He didn't know that. He's the Big East player of the year. You have to trust that he'll find it. Call a timeout, tell him to calm down, and put his ass back out there. There's nothing else to do. It's overthinking it, not putting your best players on the floor in the critical moments of a close game. They're down 4 points with 90 seconds left, and they're cranking up threes. They played the game terribly. It was just an embarrassing performance. Nothing went in. They couldn't hit a layup. Nothing went in. And I get it. There were some bad foul calls. Absolutely. They played, and this is a physical team, and a lot of people talked about how the Big East has physical teams. They play a physical brand of basketball. The whistles don't get blown as often in the Big East, during the regular season. Now, in the tournament, sometimes the whistles get a little bit tighter, and they did in this game. There's no doubt about it, they did. And the final one on Richmond, I thought was a terrible call. It's not why they lost. It's not why they lost. We shouldn't be bitching about it forever. Both teams got the same bad officiating. Both teams were in foul trouble. Both teams had guys on the bench throughout the game with foul trouble. Like, it wasn't some sort of absolute detriment to St. John. Both teams had to deal with the same bad officiating, same number of players in foul trouble, same number of starters on the bench because of foul issues. Same thing. Same thing. And I can't imagine, you know, justifying the RJ Lewis. And then for the coach to act like he did in the post game, I'm sorry, Rick, what are you talking about? How could you possibly say you know why? We don't know why. We don't know why. Tell us. What happened? Why? Because he shot the ball poorly? I'm not gonna kill one of my players. You're not? That's what you've done with this team at every turn. He embarrassed his best player on national television. He embarrassed him. There's no other way to put it. He took the Big East player of the year out of the game in a win or go home. tournament game. He took him out with 5 minutes to left, 5 minutes to go in a two-possession game. I don't know if I'd come back if I'm him. You're not going to kill your players. You killed him in front of everybody. You said he's not good enough to be on the floor. I got to play my backups. I already have my you know, best player in Richmond on the out with foul trouble, and I'm going to take the Big East tournament player out too. I've already lost my best player. I'll take my second best player, and you know, I got to bench him because hey, he hasn't been shooting it well. That doesn't make any sense. 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you. We'll take your St. John's calls. We'll transition into football. And I got a little bit more time and a little bit more, you know, perspective on the Jameis Winston signing of the New York Giants. I came on Friday. It happened like, I don't know, maybe an hour before I hit the air on Friday. And I still feel very similar, but I've had some more time to think about it. We'll get to that as well because I'm still trying to come to grips with the idea that the dream is over. The dream is over, and I still see people tell me it's not going to keep them from signing Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is still on the table. Anything's still on the table. I find that very, very hard to believe.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Drafted in 1988 in the 62nd round, the 1390th pick overall. Today, he calls Cooperstown home. Mike Piazza, welcome to the Hall of Fame.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Thunder! 152, Mick Monagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. A little bit of St. John's to get us started as we put a bookend on that. Obviously, the Sweet 16 starts on Thursday. And I think, Fleegs, you were talking with Lori back there when I was going over it. How disappointed, or just real quick, because I think we're disappointed. Because we've been talking about it for weeks, the idea of all three playing at the same day. Opening day Mets, opening day Yankees, Sweet 16 St. John's, and how we would handle that night. And now we'll never get to know. Well, they robbed us.
It took away an all-timer. So, like, I'm obviously disappointed from the aspect of being a St. John's fan.
Yes.
You know, the New York sports scene working here, all of it. But, yeah, like, having that 1-2-3 punch for one day, like, it's such a perfect storm of events that you normally can't get. And the fact that we would have, you know, if they ever move opening day back to Monday, it's off the table. Like, because you had it both Thursday. And they should have been in, like, this wasn't, oh, okay, well, they're an 8 seed. Maybe they can make a run.
No, I know.
They were a 2 seed.
A 2 seed. Absolutely. And you want to get a, and I know this is, like, silly and probably self-absorbed, but I don't think so, because it's not just me. It's about the station or the city. Like, I'm just curious how, like, if you want to get an idea of whether or not St. John's is back or whether or not how impactful they are to this city, like, if they overshadowed the first game of Juan Soto in a Mets uniform, if they overshadowed opening day Yankees and were the story of the day off a Sweet 16 game against, obviously, what would have been Texas Tech, like that's a measure of where St. John's would be. You want to, what is, can a college program like St. John's, do they have the run? Do they have the excitement? Do they capture the city? That was the test. The test was, what's the story? Juan Soto, you know, goes 2 for 3. If he hits a walk-off home run, like, I don't know. But, like,
if he does that on the road, it'd be pretty incredible.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. Hits a walk-off home run on the road, it would be really quite the story.
You kind of have to open with
that. You kind of have to open with that. He switched teams halfway through. They traded him to Houston midway through. Yeah, no, I mean, but if Juan Soto had a big day or Judge hits a walk-off or whatever, would St. John's have still been the story in a hard-fought overtime game against Texas Tech? That I would have loved to have seen that. And we got robbed of it with a poor play. So where do you stand on it? Are you as bitter as I am right now and having a trouble to find the positive in it, and where the school is, where the program is, and you know that they've found themselves and they'll probably be, you know, on, you know, maybe not this level because it's hard to be the 2 seed, but
They're a tournament team. They're led by one of the great coaches. They got money behind them. They're probably not going anywhere. Or are you still bitter about how poorly they played and the decisions the coach made and everything that came with that game?
A little of both. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I would have felt good about the future of the program as long as Pitino's there
right. Either
way.
Right.
Even though, like, now I have the nervousness of, you know, like, is R.J. Lewis feeling embarrassed? Is he ticked off at how that was handled? Is he now saying, you know what, I'm going to go play my senior year somewhere else? Mm-hmm. You know, does Zuby have kind of thoughts just because for whatever reason they didn't give him the ball in the paint the second half when Arkansas, one big guy is fouled out, the other one is sitting on the bench for a chunk of it?
Yep.
So overall about the program, my thoughts haven't changed, but this is a disappointing loss. It doesn't change the season,
right?
But this was a winnable game. And for all the talk about the refs, of course, they were bad. You know, for the missed threes, Arkansas couldn't hit a three either.
Yeah.
And the difference is, St. John's, we thought going in, was the better team.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not better than the top teams in the SEC, but that's not what Arkansas is. They were better than this team. And I thought if they played a little bit smarter, sometimes the shots aren't falling. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
But here's what you can do. When the other team is in foul trouble and even though you're not having success at the hoop, but you are having success getting foul calls, keep driving. Stop chucking up shots.
And yeah.
Then at the end, I get all the reasons why you might want to bench R.J. Lewis Jr. He was terrible in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't even benching a star player when you have a good backup. This was, especially when Kadari Richmond is fouled out, he's not part of the game anymore.
Yeah.
So you have... You're talking about a backup point guard or, you know, Davon Smith, Scott, they're doing what they can, playing maybe out of position. It's just in that moment when your second or at worst third best player is out of the game, for whatever reason, you're not committed to getting the ball to one of the other top two players inside.
Yeah.
I'd rather, Steve Lapis said it, I'd rather take my chances. I don't care if he's 3 for 17.
Yeah.
Could have been 3 for 27. You're not benching him to put in somebody who has given you even 18 to 20-something minutes a game. You're putting in guys who, in a lot of games in the regular season, they barely, if at all, see the court.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes no sense. I don't, that's the main thing. Like, because we had a caller who thinks that was the best thing because he couldn't play defense. He was terrible in the game, and I'm not going to dispute that necessarily, but there's nowhere else to go. That's really the main argument for benching him. Like, it's not even just, one, I do agree with you. He's too good to bench. He's the Big East player of the year. But even beyond that, you don't have a legitimate option. And it's not like, I said, if they benched him at some point in the second half, like 9-10 minutes left, he's playing poorly or whatever, and they just take him off his feet to talk to him and give him a break, and whoever they bring in gets hot and the offense explodes and they're playing well without him and you want to leave him on the bench, that's not the same as having no real option, nobody playing well, and benching him with 5 minutes to go. It doesn't make any sense.
You have Leotopoulos playing. He's only cracked, before Saturday, he had only played double-digit minutes in a game 3 times in this season.
Right.
Granted, they've all come in the last few weeks, but he plays his career high in minutes, and he was horrible, too.
I know.
Every shot he puts up, you know, it's just you're begging, like, stop shooting.
Right. He's 1 of 8. Like, it's not like Leotopoulos comes in and is performing well. He's 1 of 8, 1 of 6 from three-point land. Like you said he hasn't he's played 2 games. What'd you say? 2 games all year, more than double digit minutes, and he puts up 6 threes in this game. You got your life on the line. It's an NCAA tournament, win or go home, and you got Leotopoulos, who doesn't play more than 10 minutes a game, shooting up 6 threes in this game. How is that possible?
And in the games he did it, 2 of them were blowouts.
Right.
So one of the games he played a lot in that Marquette season finale, but even then, it wasn't a game with a ton on the line for St. John's. So that's when you could give him a few other minutes.
Right.
I mean, his shooting percentage on Saturday is even worse than R.J. Lewis Jr.
Yes. That's the thing. And you needed offense in those moments. It was just...
And he's your leader. He's the guy that other people on the team look to.
Yeah. Again, it's a bad message.
If Kadari Richmond is on the court, I could maybe live with this.
Yeah.
Not when he's fouled out of the game.
I agree. It's sending a message to your team, too. This is your best player. You're putting him on the bench. That's panic mode. That's, you know, we need to do something different instead of doing what they've done all year long. Like, Pitino's a great coach. It's not anything that, you know, changes that or makes you feel any worse about him being the guy moving forward. I'm thrilled Pitino's the coach. I'm thrilled to be the coach next year. And I'm sure, you know, next year he'll have a good team and he'll, you know, make decisions that we all agree with and lead them to victories. This one, I have a hard time understanding. And then how he handled it in the post game to make it seem like it's a ridiculous question. It's a leading question. It is not a leading question. It's a point blank question. Why is the Big East player of the year on the bench with 5 minutes left? Like, to finish the game. Like, you know why. I don't know why. Nobody knows why. The broadcast doesn't know why. The fan base doesn't know why. I guarantee Calipari doesn't know why. Why? Well, you know why. Okay.
Justin texted me from his seat right next to you to let me know. R.J. Lewis was one of only two players on St. John's with a positive plus minus. So for all the knocks on his defense.
Right, exactly.
And again, it was not a typical game. Again, you're putting in Leotopoulos, who is not a great defender,
right,
and is shooting even worse.
Yeah. No, it doesn't make any
and
sense.
And can't drive to the hoop and is not the leader, the alpha male of the team.
No. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. It was a terrible decision. You know, I typically, with decisions like this, when it's a coach like Pitino, you don't scream about it. That's how blatant this one was. It was so blatant that it's just, I can't wrap my mind around it. It's hard to come up with reasoning for it.
Maybe if he's on the court, Aaron Scott and Davon Smith at the end of the game when they're down two or four. Like, they're
not
still
just chucking up threes.
Right, because they look to their and say, okay,
right,
that's who the ball goes to in this situation. We trust him.
Right.
When he's off the court, I almost can't even blame them as much because, it's like the ship without a captain on the court.
No, yeah, it's true. No, there's 90 seconds left of a four-point game. They get a long rebound off a missed shot. I think it was Scott, just dribbles out to the 3-point line, turns around and shoots up a three.
Like, Wilshire had one too. Yeah. I forget, but they both had
it was off like a long rebound. They just dribbled to the 3-point line and turned around. I was like, why are you doing that? Just a hard game to understand and one that, again, it doesn't change what the season was, but it's hard for me to leave thinking, wow, what a great year. Like it at least puts a timetable before I can get to that point. Because off of that loss, a 2 seed, as you know, we see, and Justin's going to tell you in just a few minutes or a few seconds rather. Like it's chalk. It's been a chalk tournament. The Razorbacks at number 10 are the highest seed left in the tournament. You could argue that loss by St. John's is the worst loss of the tournament. Like it's hard to come off that and go, yeah, but it was really a building block. A building block of what? It's going to be a brand new team. College sports are different. You know, this isn't like the ladder of losing that you got to get through to become champions. They're going to go through the portal. They're going to pay for new players. It'll be a brand new team next year. We'll see. A couple, you know, Zuby and Lewis Jr. might be back, but it could be an entirely different team next year. Do I think it'll be good? Yes. Can they be a tournament team? I would damn well hope so. But you don't know if they'll be a Big East champion. You don't know if they'll be a 2 seed. Very disappointing loss.